The topic: Bacon's contribution to English prose. The introduction. In noted comma, a bell ringer who is up first to call other to church. In close, these words of Bacon himself imply some of his contribution to the world of letters. He was the earliest to seek, in bracket, in his advancement of learning, the way and means to unify the consolidate learning. He was almost the first to show, in bracket, through his history of Henry the VII, bracket closed, the possibilities of an authentic historical discourse free alike from the element of myth and legend as well as strained conceit and stylistic jewzas. He was definitely the first to forward through his new Atlantis the plea for a college of scientific research. Then he was the first to naturalize into English a new species of literature, namely the essay. But above all, Bacon was the first to set up through his personal example a model of English prose which had hitherto been non-existent. Referring to Bacon's contribution to English prose, Hugh Walker observed in noted comma, he took one of biggest steps ever taken in the evolution of English prose style, a step which set that style on the road which it traveled, though not without divination, down to the day of shift and addition. Noted comma closed. Prose before Bacon. Roughly speaking, modern prose, being with Dryden and the writer of the closing year of the 17th century and the beginning of the 18th, we no doubt agree with Douglas Buss that it is a vulgar error to suppose that Dryden started something altogether new. He observes, literary history has given currency to the nation that prose writing before 1660 was largely ornate and poetical, and that a plain workday modern style was first inaugurated after the Restoration chiefly through the effort of the Royal Society to develop this along with other elements of its Baconian heritage. In fact, to quote Buss again, Dryden and his fellow represented a culmination rather than a beginning. Dryden completed the transition of English prose from antiquity to modernity. Several of Dryden's preceders also contributed toward this transition. Among them, Bacon occupies a very important place. Ascham, A-S-C-H-A-M. To assess the importance of Bacon is the history of English prose. It is desirable to have a glance at the prose of his immediate preceders and contemporaries, and then to see in what way he registered an improvement upon it. Among such persons, the most important were Ascham, Lilly, Sidney, and Hooker. All of them had some definite achievement of their name. We cannot justly dismiss them as antiquated prose poet who wrote unnatural, over-ornamented, restrained, prolix and treasured prose. Take for example the work of Ascham. Ascham's prose is far from ornate. In his Toxophilus, he puts forward the claim that he is writing the English matter in the English speech for Englishmen. He seems to have put a special emphasis on English in order to proclaim his independence from the mannerism imported from Italy and France and so popular with his contemporaries prose writers. This claim, as Sainsbury points out, is no mere figure to rhetoric or bit of jingle, but a sentence to which the author adheres as far as possible throughout his work. In his vocabulary and syntax, Ascham is racy, direct and simple. However, like most contemporaries who retain and even abuses the specially English devices and alliteration, he is also fond of balance and antithesis. which remind one of Lily, so much so that he has been charged with ephuism before ephuses. Sainsbury lists two defects of Ascham's style as follows. First, it was very ill-fitted for fanciful, gorgeous or passionate expression. Second, it tended sometimes to degenerate into tameness, commonness, insipidity. Nevertheless, Ascham's works constituted a definite landmark in his history of prose. Sainsbury observed, the period of mere experiments in stocking the vocabulary and arranging the syntax. Syntax had ceased. Experiments in all directions had been made in point of subject, and at length a fairly normal style had been attained, suitable, as Ascham himself showed, for a good variety of literary purpose, if not for all. Lilly. John Lilly, dramatist and poet, is best known, however, for his prose work, Ephesus, which gave a new example of highly ornamental, gorgeous and poetical prose. Lilly gave a new word, ephuism, representing the qualities, including the stylistic characteristics of his famous work, Ephesus. Ephesus was followed by Ephesus and his England. Sainsbury calls Lilly a great mannerist in style who revolt against simple style. Euphuist style is marked by various mannerisms, such as excessive use of alliteration, often highly artificial, and strained use of similes from all kinds of sources, but especially the unnatural natural history, and still more especially the fanciful zoology of the Middle Age, use of rhetorical acquisition over incidents of parenthesis and so on. As regards syntax, it was highly diffuse and loose, or as it may be called, Ciceronian. Simplicity was at a discount, whereas uncommonness and remoteness, even unintelligibility and artifice, were excelled. However, one discordant note in ephuism may also be noted, that is the frequency of typical native phrase, such as I am of the shoemaker, a man mind who careth not, so the shoe held the plucking on. Such phrases are surprisingly enough commoner in Lilly than the Ascham. Sir Philip Sidney, courtier, poet, soldier, critic and prose stylist, was another who helped English prose to come to its own. He is famous for The Countess of Pembroke, Arcadia, a pastoral romance which achieved immediate and immense popularity. A critic observes about Sidney, he puts aside the elaborate affectations of Lilly, and while not free from mannerism, struck a happy compromise between a straightforward simplicity of Ascham and the highly colored complexity of Ephuism. His prose is generally simple, though in cadence and occasional alliteration somewhat poetical. The syntax again is somewhat unorganized and diffuse. Hooker. It was Hooker, one of Bacon's contemporaries, who through his laws and ecclesiastical polity gave a model of simple, straightforward at grave and elevated prose for the treatment of serious and philosophical subjects. This was not a model for all kinds of subjects, however. Hooker is lucid and grave from the beginning up to the end. In his syntax, however, he is the perfection of Ciceronism. He depends too much on Latinism in his syntax, much less in his vocabulary. As Goldsmith jerungly remarked about Johnson's style, Hooker's style is good enough for the mouth of wells, but hardly those of little fishes. Thus, it was not a model for all kinds of subjects, but only of a limited kind. Bacon's provided the model. It was for Bacon to provide such a working model. The prose of his essay set up such a model of lucid, straightforward English which could serve as a vehicle for all kinds of subjects, both grave and trivial, high and low. Bacon's prose is free from needless artifice, ornament, prolixity, and diffusiveness, which are qualities of the prose of most of his contemporaries, and immediate procedures, simplicity, lucidity, and flexibility, are the keynotes of his style. Though he retained some liking for analogy, antithesis, and such like qualities reminiscent of the prose of his preceders. At on the whole, he recorded an unmistakable break with the past to give a prose which was suitable for the treatment of all kinds of subject. In his essay, he treats of such elevated themes as justice and truth of one hand, and on the other, such trifling themes as muscue and trumps, which, in his own words, are no more than twice the new style of Bacon, observes Hugh Walker, in inverted comma, fitted itself as easily to building and garden as to sutures and ceremonies, as to truth and death. It could sing to the familiarity of likening money to muck, not good unless it be spread to comparison between the movement of the human mind and movement of the heavenly bodies. Revolt against Ciceronianism. Bacon was the first English prose writer who revolted against the highly organized and Ciceronian prose style of his contemporaries and immediate procedures. He was, in the words of Douglas Buss, the theoretical and the practical leader of an anti-Ciceronian movement in England. The anti-Ciceronian movement aimed at furthering the cause of simplicity, naturalness, and straightforwardness in expression as regards syntax. It favored short sentence, it favored conversational ease against strained artificial expression. It is evident that Bacon in his essays puts forward a glorious example of the possibilities of natural anti-Ciceronian expression, free from stylistic usages, prolixity, circumlocutions, intentionals, poetism, and remote analogies. There is nothing in the style of his essay which may put one in mind of the grand, rolling, finished periods of a lumbering length, rich in majestic harmonies. Bacon's style is on the other hand, aphoristic rather than Ciceronian. Comparing the aphoristic with the highly organized Ciceronian style, Bacon himself pointed out in inverted comma, aphorism representing a knowledge broken, to invite men to inquire further, various methods, that is the Ciceronian form, to secure men as if they were at furthest. Simplicity and precision. Through the prose of his essay, Bacon set new standard of simplicity and precision, which were later to be accepted as the hallmark of good prose. Being a scientist himself, Bacon was critical of all ambiguity, prolixity, circumlocution, and needless ornamentation, which go ill with everyday prose. His attitude towards was the same as his attitude to knowledge, that is, their subservience to utility. It is said distemper of learning when men study words and not matter, for words are but the image of matter, and except they have life of reason and invention, to fall in love with them is all one as to fall in love with a picture. Bacon himself never fell in love with picture. He was a economizer as regard words, and would never use to where one should suffice. That is particularly true of his earlier essay, in which his style border upon the blat. In succinctness, the style of his essay comes close to the standard laid down by Ben Jonson. In inverted comma, a strict and succinct style is that where you can take away nothing without loss, and that loss to be manifest. Inverted comma closed. Bacon's extremely condensed and terse expression is sui generis. None after him seriously tried to imitate the particular flavor of his style, probably because without his massive mind and intellectual equipment it was impossible to do so. Nevertheless, Bacon's importance lies in the fact that he imported into English prose a new sense of precision and clarity. The Elizabethan quality. Though in the precision and the clarity of his prose, Bacon looks forward to the modern, yet he is not altogether modern. His prose is still tinctured with a bit of the Elizabethan color, a true child of his age as he is. Take for instance his frequent use of Latinism, that is the legacy of an age in which Latin was the medium of instruction. The Renaissance had brought an awareness of the treasure of Latin and the Greek literature. Further, in Bacon's prose there is occasional occurrence of all kinds of analogies so popular with his contemporaries, particularly the aphorists. However, his analogies, similes and metaphors are not like the conceits of his contemporaries and immediate preceders. Further, some instance of ungrammatical structure can be quoted from his essay. His use of obsolete and obsolescent word is also reminiscent of his Elizabethanism. In short, Bacon belongs partly to the age of Elizabeth, and partly he looks forward to the late 17th century and early 18th century prose writers such as Dryden, Addison, Steele, and Swift. Redept says, in noted comma, it is probably more helpful simply to say that Bacon's prose occupies a position somewhere between the plentiful, irregular vitality of the typical Elizabethans and the late 17th century barer styles. Noted comma closed. Then a new genre. Bacon's importance in the history of English prose is also due to his naturalization of a new genre in English. We are referring to the essay. He borrowed the concept of the essay from Montaigne, the French writer whose essays appeared in 1580, 17 years before the first edition of his own essays. Bacon modified the concept of the essay so as to make it suit his own particular genius. He used it not as a vehicle of self-revelation and Montaigne did, but a repository of dispersed meditation, impersonal, practical and worldly. Later, the essay underwent a substantial change in the mind of his many followers. However, it is still held that it was Bacon who was the father of the English essay. For sheer mass of intellect, he remains till now the greatest of English essayists. His importance is therefore not only due to precedence but also to excellence. Buswell compares Bacon's followed by his successor to a well followed by a school of porpoises. The topic, Bacon's contribution to English prose, over.